Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour, and I'm here with engineer Mike Murphy, and Anna Banana is standing in the wings. Thank you for joining us and listening in this hour. Okay, I was wondering when people would start wearing masks in my dreams. And last week, I must tell you, finally, I had my first dream where people were wearing masks. So it took a year, more than a year, for that to happen. Actually, in the dream, other people had masks on, but I had forgotten to bring mine. So this was a variation of the old-fashioned, you know, finding yourself naked in the middle of school. So anyway, it's not going to be that cold at the beginning of this week with temperatures in the 50s, almost getting up to 60, but it's going to be wet from now through tomorrow night and even into Wednesday morning. From then on, we'll start to see sun on and off with temperatures slowly rising in the 50s and 60s on into the weekend. Freezing temperatures no longer look likely at night, but I would not take out the houseplants yet. We know about those spring snowstorms. So after all, it is still March transition weather, but in light of the equinox that just happened, there's really nothing else you can call this week other than spring. It is spring. So I'm looking forward to it. Okay, here's Dennis Hart with a summary of Iowa news from this past week.
The coronavirus, the Iowa State Legislature, a series of new Des Moines Register Iowa polls, and a new men's basketball coach at Iowa State University all made big news around the state last week. First, the coronavirus. The death toll from the virus continued to go up slowly last week, reaching 5,675 by yesterday. And the number of people infected by the virus in Iowa also increased, exceeding 373,000 by yesterday. Among those infections, more than three dozen involved a coronavirus variant that has been found in Iowa. It's known as the UK variant because it was first detected in the United Kingdom. A new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll published yesterday shows that 67% of Iowans plan to be vaccinated against the virus, but that 27% say they will not seek the shots. 41% of Republicans say they won't be vaccinated, compared to 8% of Democrats. Governor Kim Reynolds said all Iowans could be eligible for the coronavirus vaccine starting April 5th if the federal supply continues to increase as is projected to. Iowa might be in line to receive 200,000 to 290,000 doses of the vaccine each week starting in April. Federal officials have approved the vaccine shots for the use in Americans 16 years old or older. There was also word that no new long-term care facilities in Iowa were reporting virus outbreaks. This after more than 160 of the facilities had reported outbreaks in December. And there was a report that the Federal Centers for Disease Control had relaxed some coronavirus guidelines, saying that students can safely sit just 3 feet apart in classrooms as long as they wear masks. But the CDC also said that students should still stay 6 feet apart at sports events, assemblies, lunches, or chorus practices. In another story, the Des Moines Register reported last week that multiple lawsuits filed against meat processing giant Tyson Foods by families of employees who died of the coronavirus have bogged down in legal fights over which courts should hear the cases. And all that wrangling could take more than a year to resolve before those cases head to trial. Six families have filed four lawsuits against Tyson, which operates plants in several Iowa cities. They claim that in the pandemic's early days last year, Tyson disregarded worker safety guidelines and even encouraged employees who showed symptoms of the illness to come to work. By the 1st of May last year, more than 6,000 workers at 26 meatpacking plants across the state had contracted the coronavirus. 19 had died. Meanwhile, last week, Governor Reynolds said that the state had kept 80% of its economy going during the coronavirus pandemic. This, as U.S. News and World Report recently ranked Iowa as the best state in the nation for opportunity, using a mix of data including cost of living, housing prices, income inequality, median household income, poverty rates, and racial inequality in education rates. And there was word that the city of Des Moines planned to reopen its administrative buildings May 3rd, after more than a year of being closed because of the coronavirus pandemic. Also last week, a new series of Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa polls were released. One showed that most Iowans hold favorable views of President Biden, in spite of the state's having voted to re-elect former President Trump in last November's election. 51% of the state's residents said they hold either very favorable or mostly favorable feelings about Biden, while 46% hold either mostly unfavorable or very unfavorable feelings about him. And more Iowans approve of the job Biden is doing as president than disapprove, by a margin of 47 to 44%. Another new poll showed that Governor Kim Reynolds' popularity has slipped and that a majority of state residents say they hope she does not run for re-election next year. 52% of Iowans hope she does not seek a second term, while 41% hope she does. But 80% of Republicans hope Reynolds, who is a Republican, will run again. A majority of Iowans disapprove of the way she has handled the coronavirus pandemic. Yet another poll showed that a majority of Iowans oppose changing the state's early voting period to offer fewer days to request and cast absentee ballots. Governor Reynolds signed the new law into effect earlier this month. Among other things, it cuts the number of early voting days from 29 to 20. 52% of those polled said they opposed the changes, while 42% agreed with them. A separate Register poll showed that 3 out of 4 Iowans support increasing penalties for people who assault law enforcement officers, and almost as many favor banning racial profiling by police. Both of those policies are part of Governor Reynolds' legislative agenda on policing this year, but the proposed ban on racial profiling appears to lack support from Republican lawmakers and will not move forward. And yes, there was another Des Moines Register, Iowa poll, this one showing that more than one-third of the state's residents say there need to be fewer restrictions when it comes to the type of posts or comments that are allowed on social media. But about the same number said there need to be more restrictions. In the Iowa legislature last week, the state Senate gave final passage to a bill that would let landlords in 3 Iowa cities once again turn away renters who pay with Section 8 housing vouchers. That bill would prevent cities from passing source of income ordinances, which prohibit landlords from refusing to rent to applicants who use federal housing vouchers. Des Moines, Iowa City, and Marion now have such ordinances in effect. Meanwhile, word last week that a bill making its way through the state legislature would waive some property taxes for homeowners who make improvements in neighborhoods that deteriorated after so-called redlining, a 1930s government policy that cut off investments in mostly black, minority, and working-class areas. The state Senate also unanimously passed a bill to scrap Iowa's inheritance tax and to phase in planned income tax cuts faster. The bill went to the state House for consideration. And Senate Republicans passed anti-censorship legislation that would ban state and local government contracts or aid for certain companies that censor viewpoints on social media. Republicans in the legislature have accused Twitter and Facebook, among others, of censoring conservative viewpoints. Also last week, the state House passed a bill that says Iowans would not need a permit to buy or carry handguns. Federal background checks would still be required before each license purchase, but private sales do not require a background check under the bill. The House also passed a bill that would forbid certain divisive comments from diversity training and education. That bill requires the State Board of Regents to develop free speech training for faculty members and any individuals who have student oversight. Under the bill, if a faculty member knowingly and intentionally impedes a student's right to free speech, the educational institution could discipline or fire that faculty member. The bill passed by a 97-1 vote. The House passed another bill that defines divisive comments that could not be taught in training or curriculum at Iowa schools or government agencies. Those concepts include ideas that an individual is unconsciously racist or sexist due to their race or sex, or that the United States, or the state of Iowa, are systematically racist or sexist. Laura Bellin and I will analyze what happened in the state legislature last week, tonight at 7, on KHOI's Capital Week. Meanwhile, last week, the Federal Internal Revenue Service pushed back the tax filing deadline by 1 month. Income taxes and payments will now be due May 17th instead of April 15th. The delay came as the IRS was dealing with a massive backlog that left it unable to fully process about 24 million tax filings from individuals and businesses since the 2019 tax year. And there was also word that Iowans who received unemployment insurance last year and who already have filed their income tax returns will not need to file an amendment to take advantage of federal tax law. There was also word last week that Iowa's jobless rate had gone down in January. The unemployment rate was 3.5%. much lower than the national average of 6.3% in January. Iowa's jobless rate is tied with Kansas for the 6th lowest in the nation. In another story, word that the city of Des Moines now officially owns an 11-story parking garage that's part of a project known as The Fifth, which was in foreclosure after developers failed to pay a construction loan. A $42 million purchase agreement was finalized last week. And when it was, the foreclosure petition against brothers Justin and Sean Mandelbaum and their company, Mandelbaum Properties, was dropped, though legal wrangling over other undeveloped land on the site continues. In the world of college basketball, Word last week that Iowa State University men's basketball coach Steve Prohm would not return next season. This after the Cyclones finished this past season with a horrendous 2-win and 22-loss record. That was the fewest wins in a season for the program since the 1924-1925 season. Later last week, ISU announced its new head coach, T.J. Otzelberger, who comes to the Cyclones after being head coach at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Otzelberger was an ISU assistant basketball coach years ago. ISU's announcements came the same week that the University of Iowa extended the contract of its men's basketball coach, Fran McCaffrey. He received a 4-year extension from the university. This after the U of I finished its regular season with 21 wins and 8 losses and received a bid to this year's NCAA tournament as a No. 2 seed, the program's highest since 1987. And Drake University announced that its basketball coach, Darian DeVries, had agreed to an 8-year contract extension. This after Drake won 25 games this season. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, leaving now, but planning to return right here tonight, live at 7 on KHOI's Capital Week, when Laura Bellin and I will analyze what made news in the state legislature last week and what it all means. Then I'll find my way back here again on Friday morning at 7, when I'll have word on what makes news in Ames this week. Have a great week.
Hotel room, you and I locked in the gloom, lost out of love once again, but I've got you here with me, friend, 'cause you're here in my arms, here in my arms, here in my arms, here in my arms. Last time I looked, it was 9. You know that all things then were fine. Now I've gone and lost it again. But I've got you here with me, friend, 'cause you're here in my arms. Here in my arms. Here in my arms. Here in my arms.
Richard Holly with Hotel Room, a meditation on hotel rooms, and a very romantic one at that, too. So it was nice to start the morning off with a waltz. Okay, I'm Ursula Rudenberg. This is Local Talk, and thanks for listening. And this was to set the stage for, in fact, a conversation about hotels during the pandemic. It's a topic we haven't really covered yet, and it is an important topic in this community, as well as other ones. So to help us explore this, Neil Apadiai is with us here on Local Talk this morning. He's the director of hotel operations at Gateway Hotel and Conference Center. Neil, welcome to Local Talk.
Thanks for having me, Ursula.
I have a question for you on the onset. Your title also has the letters AGM. What is an AGM?
Yeah, that's just assistant general manager.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Wasn't sure what that meant. Okay, so we want to talk a little bit about what has happened to hotels during the pandemic, and then we also want to find out specifically what has been happening at the Gateway, which is kind of on one of our primary local businesses, hotel businesses. So, Neil, for starters, just give us a sense of what the pandemic has meant for hotels. What challenges have been created by this situation?
With restaurants and businesses like that, you can figure out ways to do a to-go service or some kind of alternative to it. With hotels specifically, if guests don't feel comfortable with traveling, you don't see. But you can't find an alternative service to it, and you're stuck with you can't. There's really nothing you can do, and that's the most frustrating part about it. Is you know you've done all these precautions, you know you've done extensive research on how to make sure how to clean a hotel room, making sure how to get rid of any kind of bacteria or germs that might be in there. But still, to the same fact, it's just not safe to travel. So you just kind of have to hang out. You gotta wait it out.
You can't offer hotel rooms to go, right?
Exactly. And I haven't figured that one out yet.
Now, the Gateway has a restaurant in it. Did the restaurant stay open during the pandemic?
It's like, I think, feel like two or three different times now. I felt very good about trying to keep it open. So me and the GM at the time, we both kind of were working back and forth together and trying to keep it open. And it just never ended up working out every time because, you know, you have college kids, and college kids are still going to in-person classes, and then they'd get positive test results for COVID. And then we'd have to shut it down, do some extensive cleaning. And by that time, we've already thrown away so much food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're losing far more than we're making. Mm-hmm. And with our restaurant specifically, it's more served as an amenity for our guests than it is like an actual restaurant like you see here in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, granted, we're very thankful for our community, but at the same time, our restaurant won't stay remotely profitable unless we're running 50% occupancy, which we didn't really see at all during the pandemic.
Yeah. So did the Gateway stay open during the pandemic?
Yeah, so we shut down in April for about a month and a week maybe, because it was like a very low occupancy. I don't think we were hitting more than 5% occupancy out of 187 room hotel, so we made the decision to shut it down. And during that time, we were actually, before COVID happened, we had bought everything to do a renovation of our hallways, so we had all that stuff sitting there. And with the entire month being shut off, ownership gave me the green light to go ahead and do a full renovation of our hallways. So we had a new carpet tiles in our elevator lobbies, foyers, wallpaper and everything.
So you made good use of the time.
Yeah, definitely.
How many employees does the Gateway usually have?
Oh, man, it's a tough one. We usually generally run off of 140 employees.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I don't think we have more than 11 people right now on staff.
Wow, you have 11 people running the hotel.
Yep.
Wow, that's incredible. So
yeah, it's definitely been a challenge.
Is the entire hotel open again? Are all the rooms open?
Yeah. So what we've been doing is we've been keeping areas of the hotel out of service. So we'll keep a few floors out just so housekeeping, you know, the two, three housekeepers we have don't have to go to all the way up to, let's say, the sixth floor on the one corner of the hotel to clean that one room, and then go down to the fourth floor and clean that room. So we're kind of conserve rooms as what we consider as labor or energy rooms as much as possible to keep the life of a housekeeper easier. And it's really not very easy at all right now, especially during the pandemic, but anything we can do to help, we just kind of keep them out of service like that. And our restaurant is still closed right now.
So how, excuse me, about how many rooms do you actually end up using? You said you had 140 rooms, is that right?
187.
187.
Yeah.
How many rooms do you actually have in use right now?
Right now, I mean, we have them all in service, but the amount are getting used, like on the weekends, are definitely our strong points. We're running 70-75%
wow.
on the weekends. Hmm. Which is awesome because we haven't seen those numbers since football season mm-hmm. last year. But during the week, we'd be lucky to hit over, 10%.
During the week.
During uh-huh. the week, yeah.
So who is coming to the hotel over the weekend? What is causing?
Yeah, so it's basketball tournaments through All Iowa Tech, and AAU tournaments has definitely been our bread and butter. This last weekend, we out of nowhere, we booked a cattle show. They were at the, and I forgot the building name here, on campus. So they had that. They created their block of rooms at the Gateway. So we were staying pretty busy that way.
And are you having? And now Gateway is also a convention center. Are there any conventions going on?
No. We have a few board meetings here or there. And they end up using our bigger rooms, and we get excited about that, but that's only because they have to socially distance. So it could be 10 people, but they're using a room for 30 or 40 people so they can properly social distance in there.
Mm-hmm. Has this affected prices at the hotel? Have you had to lower prices?
Yep. I mean, our rates are generally $109, $119, $129. I think 2019 we average $128 average rate. And our rates right now are at $79 a night.
Mm-hmm.
So with that $79 as well, you run into problems where you have sometimes the trouble guests because they can find a cheaper rate online. And
right.
Let's just say me and Ames PD have had a strong relationship just in case that were to happen.
What do you mean?
Just because a lot of the travelers now, you see during the pandemic, sex trafficking is on the rise as well. Especially during the pandemic and human trafficking. So we've been partnering with Ames PD a lot to just kind of making sure our staff is trained on that.
Uh-huh. Why does human trafficking increase in a pandemic? Do you understand that?
I don't understand the full tense of it. I mean, a little bit from what I got from one of the officers that was telling me about it was a lot of times the human trafficking sector, they happens sometimes the people that you know. So they congregate with them. They know where they're at all times. So they can just easily, they know that they're going to be at home because it's a stay at home order. So they can figure it. They can get them that way.
Say that again. I didn't follow that.
Yeah. So with stay at home orders across the US,
mm-hmm.
the traffickers, I guess, would know where you are because
huh.
you're at home. So then they prey on those individuals.
Uh-huh. When they say that they know where you are, you mean the
exactly.
the people that they traffic.
Yep, exactly.
So it's easier to find people?
I guess so, yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. So that's something your staff is trained to watch for and
absolutely, yeah.
and report. Uh-huh. So now, you as you said earlier, your staff has been cut drastically. You're a manager. Have you found yourself having to do jobs you usually don't do?
Absolutely.
So what are you doing these days?
A little bit of everything. So Gateway obviously has the Gateway Green Hills Park where we're situated on the great the walking trails. There's miles of walking trails across our property. So with those walking trails, we have like 8 waste bins for people that are walking their dogs and stuff like that. So once I furloughed my facility staff, I neglected to realize we had those that there. So I
so
had
somebody's
some,
so somebody's emptying trash bins,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so somebody has to do that. It's the dog waste bins, cleaning the pool, getting certified as a certified pool operator.
Oh wow, you had to lay
rooms.
Off your pool staff.
Yep. So it's been me, my GM, and Mike from our facilities team. Thankfully, he's been brought back at least on 2 days, and we're hoping to get him back on full time here shortly. But yeah, that's kind of been us. We've been spread thin, doing all the basics, working the events, working front desk shifts, working overnight shifts, whatever we got to do.
Are you out? Do you also find yourself having to clean rooms?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just, our housekeeping team, Linda, she's been at Gateway for, I think, 18 years now. So she, a lot of the times, she says I'm slowing her down, so she doesn't let me help out as much. So she makes me, she lets us strip rooms and get those rooms stripped so the housekeepers can go in and just get things taken care of. But yeah,
you're not cleaning any toilets yet?
I was for a while.
Oh, okay.
And then she kind of got frustrated because I was working too slow. So I said, you know what? She goes, she timed me. She goes, my housekeeper's got more rooms done when you were just cleaning bathrooms.
Oh, wow. She fired you.
Yeah, she did. She did. So I said, you know what? You're right. Let me go back to clean the pool.
So back at the office, you probably have to do some creative bookkeeping to, I mean, I don't mean that in a negative way, but you probably have had to make a lot of decisions about, you know, what to cut and what to keep the business open. Can you keep the business profitable under these circumstances?
Absolutely not. Especially with us being the only full service hotel, it's hard to compare to other hotels around here, but with us having our entire food and beverage area, our kitchen, our, you know, we have a lot of executive staff from director of food and beverage to executive chef to director of sales. We just have a lot of staff, and it's extremely hard to stay profitable on that margin, especially with the rates.
So
the $79 rates, it's
right.
You just can't stay profitable.
So what's the plan? I mean, the plan is to just try not to rack up too much in the red and then make up for it later, or how does this work?
Exactly. We're just kind of hunkering down right now. One shining light has been through this thing is we're one of the only hotels around the community that does not have a bank loan per se.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't have to worry about that throughout the pandemic because a lot of hotels around here had to shut down. American and Country Suites are two hotels that are still shut down, I believe. A lot of other hotels are going under, you know, up for sale, up for auction. So that's kind of been a trouble as well. But we're kind of hunkering down, waiting for, you know, the vaccine rollout to get out there and have people start feeling more comfortable traveling. And that's kind of when we'll see more uptick with increasing our rates. And
any danger that the hotel would close permanently?
Absolutely not. No. That's why I was saying is with us not having any bank loans or anything, our ownership definitely sees this as, you know what, we'll keep putting profits into the hotel. And they won't worry about really taking out their share.
Okay. So, Neil, just tell us just a little bit about the Gateway. The Gateway, sometimes looks like a corporate business, but it's actually a locally owned business, right?
Yeah. Yep. So it was built in 1978. ISU Foundation, with the help of some investors, built it and owned it and they operated it. And they went through a couple different flags. It used to be a Holiday Inn, a very nice luxury hotel that way. And then the new ownership group, which took it over, did not want to keep it under a flag. So they made it an independent hotel. And the same group of investors that invested in it in 1978 actually bought it off from the foundation, more years after. I can't tell you the exact date on that.
So now it's a local business, right?
Yep, absolutely. Independent local business.
Yeah.
Operated by people in Des Moines.
So tell us how you got here. How did you end up? You're actually kind of a young thing, right?
Yep, I'm 24 years old.
So how did you end up the manager of a hotel?
So I was actually born and raised in Chicago, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
My parents bought several hotels in the area.
And your parents are of Indian, from India, right?
Yep. My parents are from India. And, you know, they always wanted to own a business. And so hotels was their calling, I guess. So they bought one hotel, which was the Viking Hotel in Story City, which I think it's something else now. And then they bought a few more around Wisconsin, a couple more in Davenport. So, and they wanted to get us out of the Chicago neighborhood. So we moved to Story City, Iowa, a town of 800.
Wow, from Chicago to Story City.
Yeah, so I worked.
How old were you when that happened?
2008. So I was in sixth grade.
Oh, wow. You must have been a little bit upset.
I was, definitely. I had, like, no friends. and being the only person of color in the entire school practically was kind of rough, too. It was definitely a game changer. and trying to go in through that. But so I worked through there, and my dad actually passed away 6 years ago. So we actually ended up, I had all the hotel because I was the estate holder of my dad at 18. So I had this, I was owning a bunch of hotels with my mom at 18. I just said, I cannot do this. So yeah. We sold the hotels off, and I was going to get a part-time job. And my mom said, why don't you stick to hotels? So Gateway was hiring. Weirdly enough, I found the job on Craigslist.
Really?
As a part-time front desk agent. And let me tell you, I was the one employee that you probably hate. Like the one that was calling off part-time, only on 2 days a week, but I would still call off those 2 days a week. And my GM, that's my current GM right now, my boss, he was actually my front desk supervisor. So we were both hourly employees, like on the low end of the totem pole. And we actually have a Snapchat that we posted one like in back in 2015 that said, one day we'll be running this place. And fast forward, you know, five, six years later, we're actually the one number one and two of the hotel.
Wow. It's a little bit hard to picture from where you started, but something must have changed.
I'm a lot more responsible now, let's just say.
So now the pandemic is your payback, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And now here you are cleaning toilets and getting criticized. Well, it's good. I'm glad to hear that you don't feel any concern about closing the hotel. I mean, it is a flagship business in Ames. And it sounds like it's hard times, but you feel confident that this business is not going away.
Definitely. Yep. And the restaurant is also a good green light as well. So we're going to be opening that up right the first week of May as well, right before graduation. So.
Okay, and I'm told that the pool is open too, and the hot tub.
The pool is open. The pool and hot tub is open.
Okay, that's good news. Okay,
that's me keeping it open. So,
okay, yeah, well, you're going to keep those chemicals in balance, right? No weird chemistry going on by the amateurs.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so you're better at pool chemicals than toilets.
I guess so.
Okay. Well, thank you, Neil. Thank you for telling us a little bit about the Gateway and just to give us a sense in general about what happens at hotels during a pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Yep, you too. See you
guys. Take care. That is the second waltz by Shostakovich, a little bit of beautiful music to round out the hotel story. And this is Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening. We are really enjoying hearing kind of about local businesses today. And you may be familiar with Morning Bell Coffee Brewery at the eastern end of Main Street in Ames. And went in there for my 4 o'clock tea, which is the Alex. Rose tea, very nice. And I saw the artwork of Sudhanva Kashyap, who is a landscape photographer and currently has an exhibit at Morning Bell. And I was really struck by the quality of the work. So I looked up his information on the display that's on the counter. And this is what I learned. Sudhanva is from Bangalore, India. And he's been living in Ames since 2015 as a postdoctoral research researcher at Iowa State University, and he's an avid traveler and national park enthusiast. He won awards for photography at the Iowa State Fair, and his camera of choice is the Nikon D750. Did I get that right, Sudhanva?
Yes, yes, you did.
Well, welcome to Local Talk. I just really wanted to drag you onto the radio to find out who the person is behind these beautiful photographs. It's very, very impressive photographs.
Thank you.
Just an incredible feel for color.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yeah.
Tell us who you are. I mean, other than what I've already told people.
So I'm from, like you said, I'm from Bangalore, India. And I think we moved to Ames. So we moved to America in 2014, and we lived for a while in West Palm Beach in Florida. And then I got a job in Iowa State University. So we had to move to Ames from West Palm Beach, of all the places. And I think we moved in the winter too. So, and then we were treated the day after we moved, we were treated to a snowstorm, and it was incredible.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, big change.
Yeah, it was. So I've been here since 2015. I work as a postdoctoral researcher, now I'm a senior scientist.
What kind of research do you do?
So we work on infectious diseases caused by parasitic nematodes or worms. So they are prevalent in a lot of tropical countries, and some of them even in the United States in the southern part of America. So we work on them. I've been in the lab of Professor Richard Martin and Alan Robertson for years now.
So where did the photography start?
Yeah, so I've always been an avid stargazer, and I've always had a thing for astronomy. So I used to go out, you know, dark skies aren't, very rare in Iowa. They are, you know, you just have to go about 20 miles out and you get a dark sky and you can just watch the stars. So I thought, okay, let me just try and photograph these. But what I've been seeing, because you can actually see the halo of a Milky Way, on a clearly, really dark night. So I started photographing it, and then I started observing the light a little bit more, and I thought, hey, you know, I can photograph other things, not just the Milky Way. And I caught on, and then I think, you know, started observing more and more and started evolving, and here I am, basically.
So then you started really photographing a lot of landscapes, right?
Yeah, so it started off with grand landscapes. So we travel a lot, my wife and I, and we've been to quite a few national parks, but I always used to shoot the grand landscape in the obvious shot, and then it felt like, you know, everybody shoots these, you know, it's just a point and shoot camera would do what I'm doing. So I thought I'd try to kind of focus on rather intimate shots, you know, just kind of zoom in a particular area, and people were like, hey, where is that, you know? And well, that's Iowa, or that's, you know, Yellowstone. I was like, really? That doesn't look like it, kind of thing. So trying to focus in on maybe one or two subjects, and that's what I've been doing since the year or so, I guess.
Well, the thing that really struck me most about the photographs was the attention to color. Is that conscious on your part, or is that just happen naturally in the process?
Yeah, I mean, I do like some of the black and whites, but I think sometimes black and white photographs work, but, you know, when you have a color and you kind of, you know, use complementary colors, it kind of, you know, it gives the image its soul, you know, kind of like it speaks to you kind of sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it's a very conscious effort to make colorful images, yeah.
Yeah, and very colorful, successfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Well, with us also is Nadav Mehr, who is the owner of Morning Bell Coffee. Thank you for joining us, Nadav.
Ursula, it's a pleasure. And Sudhanva, good morning to you too.
Good morning, Nadav.
So, Nadav, why did you pick this collection of work for to be exhibited?
So Sudhanva, like many of the artists that contact us to show their art, you know, I really see our art program at Morning Bell as super inclusive. We have a huge range of people that get in touch with us to show their art. And I, you know, as a longtime art lover and someone who grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, in the shadow of the Rhode Island School of Design and like a really heavy art community, at some point I picked up this idea that it's not my job to judge. I am not a judger of who's going to put up their art. So we get contacted by all sorts of folks who are professors in the design college, right? People with a lot of experience and folks that maybe have never shown their work before. So it's very open-ended. So Sudhadra's work clearly, I agree with you, Ursula, stands out. And I love some of the surreal vibes. There's something almost Dali-esque about the way that the images are framed to my mind. So I definitely enjoy his work. And the other point I'll make, Sudhadra, I haven't talked to you about it, but I saw on Instagram your wife's artwork, and it looks like she does some mandalas and things, and her work looked amazing, and I was so enamored to see her stuff. So you guys, between the two of you, have some serious art going on at home.
Yeah, thanks. First of all, you're too kind. Secondly, I've been telling her to see if she can put up some art somewhere, but she's just not ready yet, according to her, but she will soon,
see if you can. But Nadav, you mentioned the surreal quality of the photographs. There's one photograph that really stands out that way. There's a farm landscape with a wind turbine in the foreground. Talk to us about that. That is just an incredible meditation on scale.
So that was, I think that was in January of this year, I think it was the penultimate winter full moon in Iowa. So I think I was a lot productive in taking photographs at that time of the year because, I leave work at around 5-ish. And the sun sets around the same time during that time. So this was in Nevada, I think, somewhere near Nevada. And I remember it was really, really, really cold. It was about like -25 Celsius or something.
Yeah, it looks cold. You see it in the photograph.
Mm-hmm. So I was there and I was trying to see where I can shoot. And I really was fascinated with minimalism. So I had another photograph, something similar. 2 years back, I was also Windmill and the Moon. So this is Windmill and the Moon part two. So, and I was just the windmill and the moon. And I thought I would include some Iowa in it. So I had this little, I think it was a bunch of houses there. And just to add scale to the enormous size of the wind turbine and also the moon rising. And I remember I stood there and I was literally like trying to do some, I was walking up and down waiting for the moon to come in because I wanted to keep myself warm.
So you worked for this photograph.
Yeah. And I eventually, when it came out, I just forgot everything and it was just so beautiful. And it kind of reminds me of an old Alice in Chains song. It says, like the coldest winter chill, heaven beside you, hell within, kind of. It was like that. So, yeah. So
well, it paid off. It paid off big time. That's a remarkable photograph. Yeah. It's a strange in many ways, right, Nadav?
That one is one of my favorites too. And for us to have art up on our walls, we always like to get it to be part of the background. It's like I want it up long enough that we can almost ignore it, and it becomes part of our daily life. And that one always stands out to me. I don't know whether it's the placement of it, but I'm totally drawn to that image. And yeah, I agree with you, Ursula. The surrealism of that one is what stands out.
Yeah. It's really a visual oxymoron when you look at it. It's just impossible to reconcile those three things, the moon, that enormous turbine, and that tiny little farm. It's very, very strange. But there's photographs there that are from India, right?
Yeah, there are a few, I think. There are about three of them from India. And it was kind of funny that last year that we were... So we went back home to India, my wife and I, to basically renew our visas. So, and then as and when we were lucky enough that we got the visas, and then the whole country shut down due to COVID-19. So we were, one of the photos there was...
So you weren't able to, you had to stay in India, right?
Yeah. So we were in India for about four and a half months, I think. So we're trying to, so we were traveling at the time just before, like a few days before the country shut down. We were actually in New Delhi. And we were visiting this complex of tombs, in New Delhi, in the central New Delhi called Qutub Minar. And there was this photograph I wanted to take with the minaret in framed by one of the arches. And I got lucky that a plane was flying just as, you know, when I was taking the shot, and it got captured. And that was probably like, you know, it's kind of very symbolic that it was one of the last few flights to fly out before everything went down, kind of thing.
And that's great. It was,
yeah. And then I had a lot of fun photographing my mother's garden. So we have a couple of banana. My brother has grown a couple of banana trees in my house. So it's kind of funny when you say a banana tree, it's basically a bunch of leaves. And it kind of, when the leaf comes up, it you know, untwirls.
Right, unfolds, right.
So one of the leaves was budding, and I was like, okay, that looks like a nice photograph. And it just rained. So when it just rains and it's still cloudy, your eyes perceive saturation in a, well, it perceives more, I mean, it perceives more saturation, I guess. Like, so I was taking the photograph, and then it kind of worked out really well because I was standing on top of a ladder with my wife and my mother holding it in so that I don't fall, and took the photograph. And it was kind of very symbolic in the sense that everything was spiraling out at that time, but we knew that it would eventually straighten out. So it kind of was very like, you know, symbolic, metaphorical for what wow. we were all going through at that time. So I really enjoyed taking that as well.
These are historic photographs.
Yeah,
Well, one thing I get from all this is that you really work for the photographs. They don't happen, you know, just by accident, that you really. Give us your artist statement. What does this all mean to you?
Well, for me, most artists, some photographs mean a lot more than some of them. And I'm not very sentimental to all of my photographs, but I do remember vividly. When I look at a photograph, I remember the moment of when I click the shutter. I kind of relive the moment every time I look at a photograph, and that's what means they mean to me. But at the same time, while I was shooting a lot more in 2019 and 20, I wasn't really posting a lot of these photographs on social media, because taking a photograph and making a photograph is one thing, but actually sharing it to the world is a completely different thing. And I'm a very private person like that. But looking at all the things that were happening in the world, and I didn't kind of feel right, you know, oh, there's so much wrong happening in the world, and I'm just come here posting a bright, colorful photograph, and it didn't really make sense for me. So I don't think I posted like 5 or 6 photographs online all of 2019 and 2020, a lot fewer. But then somewhere down the line, early 2020, I think I posted the photograph of a couple of bison in Yellowstone. So basically they're looking away from each other, and the Yellowstone River is flowing in the middle, and there was smoke coming out and everything. So I thought I'll use this in trying to express myself. And I said, hey, you know, with the political tension, nobody's willing to look in the eye and actually communicate. And the river that flows, I use this as a wedge that's dividing us much further. I thought, you know, okay, I can post. I can also explain what I feel, make peace with myself that way, I guess. So now I think I'm doing that a lot more. At the same time, I do get some negative feedback from people, but I don't mind.
Have you gotten any feedback for the show at Morning Bell?
Yeah. I did. I think there are a couple of people who did come and purchase a couple of prints.
That's wonderful.
Nada mm-hmm. For that. Thank you so much for having my photographs there. I think there's another person who did contact me and said that the photographs are really good. But yeah, it's been good so far.
Well, it's definitely worth a look. It's a really remarkable set of photographs. Thank you. Nadav, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well. I was going to say, and the coffee as well is really, really good for anyone who wants to go.
Nadav, speaking of which, Nadav, you're the owner of Morning Bell. How is Morning Bell doing? How has it survived the pandemic?
We're doing very well. It's really amazing how well we're doing, considering that we don't have seating. So that's kind of the big decision and inflection point that we have coming up, right? It's like, every small business has to make this choice for themselves as to when to open it up to seating. And for a lot of folks, it's a stark economic choice, right? That people are going to have this choice either to earn more money, have more people come and sit in. And we really feel like safety is still our first concern. And we don't want to lead the charge on that. I'd rather be toward one of the last businesses to open up for seating and not one of the first. So we're still waiting. And, you know, as we become more vaccinated ourselves as a staff at the shop, I suspect we will open up. My guess is sometime over the summer. Other than that, it's great.
You tend to have young people at the shop, so they're not first in line for vaccination, right?
But we do have a lot of younger people, but also a lot of folks that just come through that really care, you know, mm-hmm. that are very among that group that are the more anxious folks who don't want to get it, you know, who want us to try to drag stuff outside for them, which we're always happy to do. And, you know, it's, we want to keep the people who are most anxious the most comfortable.
But the takeout business is going well.
It's going very well. And mm-hmm. the bean sales have been very strong, both in the shop and through our wholesale channels.
And now, you have a new business in the back, right? Back Alley Plants.
Yes. And he's been doing amazing. And yeah, the tropical plants, indoor tropical plants during the pandemic has been great. And, you know, having the art up really, it brings joy, you know? So for us, especially as a staff, there's times where, right in the past, the coffee shop vibe, people would come, sit. It was always the social party atmosphere the whole time we were open for years. But with COVID, those times that people come in, we have a great interaction, then they leave. That really changes the vibe for us as a staff. So the art takes on greater urgency, greater takeover of our lives in a lot of ways. So
yeah, because when I go into Morning Bell to get an Alex, which is usually what I do, I had the opportunity to kind of walk around the store and look at the artwork. And in some ways it's easier because there are no real, you know, tables in the way. So the artwork it's really kind of feels like a gallery right now.
It does. And so the art gets a lot more attention in that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sudhandra's show has been really wonderful. It's been really amazing. And his work is going to be up until the end of this month.
Okay.
So for those folks who are listening that haven't been in yet, you're invited. Don't feel like you have to buy anything. Just come in, check out the art, and you know, you can treat us as an open gallery anytime you want. And it's really beautiful to be able to have the community have access to art.
Okay, well, thank you both of you for coming and joining us this morning. It's really a wonderful way to start the day. I've been speaking with Sudhandra Kashyap, who is the photographer who is on display at Morning Bell, and of course the owner of Morning Bell, Nadav Meir. Thank you for offering this beautiful work to us as well. Thank you to both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks, Ursula. Thanks,
Sudhandra. Thank you. Anna, final words from you. Anna Banana.
Well, Anna Banana's going to have to check out the coffee there. And also, I'm so interested in seeing that photograph of the banana plant. Anna Banana, looking at the banana plant. So I can't wait. So what an amazing Local Talk program. And as I knew that Eneil was going to be one of the guests on Local Talk, I wanted to find...
We kind of accidentally had a theme of Indians, too, right? We had two Indian talent. It's kind of interesting.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. So as I knew, so Neil was actually part of my Leadership Ames class of 33, and I knew that he was coming on, so I wanted to find something connected to hospitality and found this website, heartfulness.org, which is interesting in itself. And this post, which is not only the perfect heart-to-heart message in honor of Neil and the entire team at the Gateway Hotel and Conference Center, but also dedicated to Morning Bell Coffee Roasters and the artists, too, for doing things that are amazing during most challenging times. But this also is just a wonderful way to start a week together, and the post was this. On a stormy night, an elderly couple looking for a room stopped at a small hotel. The young clerk at the desk informed me, the couple, that all the rooms of the hotel were booked and that not a single room was available that night because of an international conference. However, seeing their plight, the young clerk decided not to let them go out in the bad weather and offered them the use of his own room. The couple was reluctant as this would cause great inconvenience to the young clerk. "Where are you going to sleep, young man, if you offer your room to us?" asked the old man. "Oh, I am young and single. I can sleep in the reception area at night. I insist that you accept my offer as I cannot let you go out in the storm. The couple were obliged to accept the offer, and the next day the old man, after having expressed his gratitude, offered a handsome reward to the young man. Please do not embarrass me with the offer of money, as it is not ethical or legal for me to accept money for my room. I didn't get my room expecting any monetary compensation. I just wanted to be of some help to you. So the simple story of kindness really struck me and helped me to understand what compassion truly means. Compassion arises out of a pure heart that does not differentiate between human beings on any basis. It gives without expecting anything in return. Compassion is love in action. A heart filled with love feels for every being of the universe. In the above story, the elderly couple was really being touched by the words of the young clerk. They realized that offering money would be an insult to such a noble act. A deserving reward would be to do something for him that would touch his heart. Can you imagine what a different world it would be if there were more human beings like this young hotel clerk? However, more often than not, we're plagued by our own complexities and tendencies of greed, desires, selfishness, and ignorance. We ignore the fact that true love, the world can be a happier place to live in. We may find success in material world, but that does not necessarily translate into happiness. Happiness is achieved when we look within and discover that it resides in the natural state of a loving heart. Often when a compassionate heart touches another, it receives an act of compassion in return. In the story, the elderly couple reciprocated the young man's gesture by offering him the manager's position at one of the world's biggest hotels to show their appreciation. This may be a more material example, but explains that kindness is returned by kindness. A compassionate heart has the power to transform any human being. In the fairy tale of Beauty and the beast is transformed into a prince only through the love of the princess. Love teaches a human being to give everything of himself or herself. So when a human being learns to love, he learns to give. As more and more people change in this way, a silent revolution takes place, making the world a better place to live in. So Ursula, that is my heart-to-heart message for Monday. And so it's back to you, because Anna Banana's time to split, but love you bunches.
Okay. Thank you. And you've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Anna Banana, Mike Murphy, Nadav Mehr, and Sudhanva Kashyap, who are still with us. Thank you for staying with us. And KHOI airs Local Talk at 7 a.m. on Mondays. And remember to check in at 7 p.m. for Capital Week with Dennis Hart and Laura Bellin. The program is engineered by Mike Murphy. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris. We also heard Hotel Room by Richard Hawley and The Second Waltz by Shostakovich. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. And Anna, where will we see you again?
We'll see you again on the radio.
Thank you.
City, Ames, and surrounding area.